All right, welcome everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer, and this is your show. We do on Saturday. We give in this real estate to talk about things that are happening in tech. We started the show to let some of you who are on the more novice side of things have a place to be able to sort of like reconcile all of your problems and pay attention to the verbiage so you can get good at this. I mean, it's no fun sort of being on the you know, the downside of the knowledge curve. When all of the world is operating on all of this stuff, we took it upon ourselves to take the most critical of technology, the people who swore it off and said that I'm going to paper and giving them a place that once they're kind of get over the fact that you can only stave it, you can only push it off for so long, that will help you kind of get on board the train and use the more, these are as a tool, you know, take away the entertainment value. Let's just say you don't see any function in the entertainment side of just using this as a tool to find information or connect with places, buy things, sell things, using it as that utility. I mean, so be it. And then you find some practical uses for it, then you don't, you know, you end up, that's your in, get you started. And then once you learn how it can satisfy other parts of your life, then it's, it's all on your own terms. But this is a place for you to develop those skills and those psychologies, and we'll take it from there. 330-729-9977. Already we got a phone call, so I'm going to go with Nick. Nick, you're on the Youngstown Computer Show. How can I help you?
Yeah, I want to thank you for discussing this today. It's really kind of ironic because I was just getting into the weeds a little bit with a friend of mine who's trying to get into this. And one of the things that I warned him about was something you just touched on, and that's all the paper hangers that there are out there. And he has a personal trade account. I told him, I said, you know, look, download one of those Coinbase programs or something, because they're only going to present you with the opportunity basically to buy what's out there in the way of real Bitcoin. And if you use your trade account, you don't know who's trying to hang it on you. You buy up a bunch of their stuff for what seems like very cheap, and you're waiting forever for it to move 2 pennies. So, you know, I see a lot of value in what you're talking about, and I'm glad you're there to do it for us.
Oh, well, thank you, Nick. I appreciate it. Now, have you invested in anything yet? Have any personal experiences yet?
Yeah, I took a shot on a paper hanger one time, and, you know, I got out even or a little bit better maybe, but... I was going to be waiting forever on this thing, I think, and it is a waiting game.
Yeah, for sure.
There is no timing it. Yep. And, you know, as the market moves, presumably everything else is supposed to get better with it, too. But, you know, these are basically Bitcoin brokers on the trade side. And, you know, I now have Coinbase, and I'm going to start, you know, throwing some money out of every payday. And pretty soon I'll have a few $100, and I'll be able to sit on it and watch it and see what it really does.
Beautiful. Yeah, make sure you find me over on Facebook and follow the purchases, both the mining equipment and also that, and you can kind of live vicariously through those experiments that I go through.
Well, I've actually got a pretty bad idea machine right now. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to expand and put a couple of gamer cards in
yes.
it and let it roll.
Nice. Okay, make sure you check in with us and let us know how things are going from time to time.
Will do.
Beautiful. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate you being out there. Appreciate you calling.
You bet.
All right. Take care. And if you missed that part of the last episode, we talked a little bit about Bitcoin. And if you're not aware of this, Coinbase, which I'm really thankful that we have sort of like a U.S.-based company that is working on being a a buyer and seller, being a marketplace for being able to store, buy and sell. They've been around since I was involved the first time around, the 2014. I dealt with them before. I've done both. I've purchased Bitcoin off of the regular markets, not in Coinbase, and then transferred them to a paper wallet or my own local core wallet. And I definitely have a preference for using service-based. Now, I've picked other marketplaces that, again, these were based overseas. They don't have to play the same game. There was a couple of them that ended up like taking all the customers' money and bailing. So it is very important that you have, if you personally are holding them, then you know what you're doing. If not, use like a Coinbase. Now, and those of you who are familiar with Coinbase, they have two platforms. They have Coinbase, the regular platform, and then they have Coinbase Pro. So if you end up doing more of like your market making and having different markets available to you, you can transfer or create your account in the Coinbase Pro platform as well. And I've had there's more information, there's more analysis, and I you know, they have the same kind of authentication policies. So just make sure your stuff is safe, like our last caller alluded to. I think they're a pretty stand up company from our experience. And just make sure you're basing a company that's dealing in the United States, you know, that way. So a little bit of, let me give you what this mining thing is, because that seems to be the most elusive portion as to why the heck would you even do it. So the Bitcoin value comes in that it's a decentralized, they're calling it like a currency, but it's acting as a currency, but it's a little bit more than a currency. So when you say decentralized, it means that nobody has authority over it. It is completely supported by having lots of people participating, and the authority is divided by all of the participants. So what gets included and what gets removed is completely based on sort of like an agreement process of everyone. So the more people you have in Bitcoin, the more decentralized it is, because then if, you know, one person garners 51% of the authority, then they can then decide that transactions that shouldn't be there are there. So it's really important as a participant to decentralize and keep that decentralization. That's the most valuable portion. Now, what will Bitcoin be? What is even a more valuable exercise of Bitcoin? I think that it's going to be more of like a transportation vehicle. So you have the monetary portion of the vehicle that makes people want to get involved because of the cash or the, you know, the returns on it. But once it's there, it's a very secure method of getting data to be transmitted. So let's just say blockchain, think of it as a big spreadsheet, a big register of every transaction that has ever occurred, right? And so I can take a Bitcoin transfer where I bought a candy bar in 2014, and I can go find that transaction in the permanent log of what is the blockchain. And everything is there has to have the approval of other participants, and they all have to vote and compare what deserves to be there or not. So if somebody makes an input into the blockchain and nobody has a transaction record, it gets discarded. So it's really hard to hack or put things in there that don't belong. And so where I see this going is maybe like voting. We all know that in any system there could be fraud, right? So what would be the best way of making sure voting fraud could not happen is a system like blockchain. Where it has to be an agreement where if I made my vote, it would have to be authenticated by everyone who was participating in the voting system. And if I tried to like squeeze one in, its registration would not be in the conventional way. And then everybody would just discard it, and it would be not included in the finance or the total blockchain. And that's what makes it great, is that you have to have too many people that say, yes, that looks good, before it gets included. It's a system that is slow. Right? Every transaction takes 10 minutes to authenticate as we keep asking everyone if they saw that transaction come through and before it's included in there. So think about how many people you'd have to trick to include a vote in the national voting blockchain. So I hope that it absolutely includes some kind of voting system in the future. I will have way more, it'll be way more solid. I'll have a little bit more trust in a system that, you know, if I look back and see that transaction, I can look at my vote like right now, right? And because it becomes part of the permanent log of what happens. So I'm not going to belabor that anymore, but that's the quick example. And I appreciate that phone call. I know a number of you out there have interest in it, and I hope I can give you just enough details to help you make up your mind whether or not you want to put some of your money in Bitcoin. So what is Ethereum then? So there are other versions of Bitcoin that could be launched. As soon as Bitcoin got popular, then a bunch of other alternative coins to Bitcoin became popular. And some of them actually made improvements on what Bitcoin was. Bitcoin is by far the largest accepted cryptocurrency, but also Ethereum and Dogecoin and all these, they have their day in the sun and people talk about them, but they're just a lower valued, a little bit different of a coin. So maybe where Bitcoin's at $60,000 or $70,000, Ethereum might be at $3,000 proportionally. So entry into it has a lower lower value. And I'm telling you, people, you don't have to buy full Bitcoins. You don't have to spend $60,000. I mean, you can make $100 or $200 or $20 investments at a time. So thank you for that question. Let's see, Joe, I have a question, not directly related to computers, but concerning the elimination of the 3G on cellular coverage and wondering how life, will these phones still be able to operate on 4G? And what happens if you don't have 4G signal? Will it drop? I don't officially know how that rolls, but I think what's going to happen is you're going to see the hardware that gets produced has to be compliant through a certain period of time. So like 3G is going to have all the manufacturers are going to know when 3G is not going to be supported. And so when they develop the next generation of phones, they're going to have some forward compatible, where if they know 5G is coming, that they have to be forward compatible with what's going to happen. Current compatible, where if 90% of the network is 4G, and then also some manufacturers can still be 3G compatible. And even further behind. So it's going to be really dependent on the network and the equipment that's out there. They don't have to do any of that. If you buy equipment, it's going to have a support. You know, you can look up your standards and see what it's going to support. And it's not going to be an immediate thing, where if it's on a tower, you pretty much see when you go into an area, LTE 4G is probably your standard, right? You see it in more places, but every once in a while you go to an offshoot of the highway, and all of a sudden you'll be on an edge network, which I consider edge to be completely legacy, but your phone still can pick up a signal because it's got the antenna. Could there be a day where edge is just, you know, thrown off and there's not going to be compatibility? Sure. I mean, that can totally happen, but I think these things happen at a really slow pace. So I would say, you know, read the standards. I wouldn't operate. I would say every 5 years, just get comfortable with replacing your hardware. And that's on the long side. I mean, most people are on a replacement schedule of 2 to 3 years. So 5 is an awful long time in the world of cell phones. The phone that I'm on right now, I think it's the 11. I'm 2 generations back, which means I'm 2 years. And it has really started to slow down after the iOS 15 update. It got real slow. I almost, really regret having upgraded to that already. So I hope that answers your question. If you do want to text me, it is 330-333-1570. I'll read those messages on the air, and we can talk about, you can ask your questions a little bit more passive than using the phone lines, but you can also call me, 330-729-9977, and we can talk about computers or cellular or Bitcoin or whatever you'd like. And I do want to tell you a little bit about the stuff I've, new projects that I've got going on as well. But just so you know, over, you know, my original original conception of what Youngstown Computer was going to be, if you follow us long enough, you know that we're a computer provider, a computer service provider. We do residential services and commercial services. And so the original design was that we, you know, most of you who had desktop computers, you really weren't keen on taking your machine and putting it in your trunk and driving it somewhere. So really the demand that we were going after were people that, you know, we wanted our technicians to come out to you. We'd see your machine in its native habitat, and we'd be able to problem solve and troubleshoot, issues with printers and wireless and all that pretty easy because all your stuff was around it. And then 90% of all of our services ended up being, started being malware infections. And malware infections were incredibly hard to fight on site. So we went to a model where we did more of you coming to us because that's where 90% of you were. But thankfully, through whatever happened in the new versions of the operating system and just combating all of these infections, it happens less and less. I would say that maybe 50% of our stuff now, well, not even that, maybe 25% are some kind of infections. Everything else is putting money in new equipment and upgrading equipment. And it's really been great because that's siphoned up a lot of technology budgets in responding to infections and security products. So I'm really glad that we're at this place. But now I think it's time that we can go and start getting back to the old, getting back to the old model where we come to you, we can do a much better job. You don't have to take your computer. So in the coming weeks, probably 100% by November, 50% by the end of October, and like 25% right now, that you can start requesting those field appointments where we come to you. Give us a couple more weeks to kind of get everything put together, but for sure we're going to be doing much more in the field side of things. And we are on a huge hiring binge. We've hired 3 people within the last couple weeks, and they're all going through their training regimen. We still need some level 2 practitioners. So if anybody has a, wants to do, have done computers in the field before, please send your resume to me. Joe@youngstowncomputer.com is my email address. Find me on Facebook, message me over there. But easiest way, get your resume to me somehow, and I will get you interviewed this week on Wednesday. I believe I'm doing some more in-person interviews. So feel free. Again, that's Joe@youngstowncomputer.com. Send me your resume. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. This is the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Daniel, your host. Get to talk about things that are happening in the technology world. The stuff that we needed to talk about is different now than it's ever been, and it's really I would say it's better now than it's ever been. I picture sort of like people who just get started in technology and what kind of resources are available to them to learn how to use this stuff. We all feel stupid when we start using it and using new things. And I don't care if you're talking about, going to a new restaurant or, doing a new type of venue. It's the stuff that you don't know that makes you kind of like sit back and gather details before you feel comfortable wading in. And that's the same thing with technology. I know people who are on flip phones. I know people who don't use smartphones at all, and they're putting off using them because it's brand new and new stuff. We're better at old stuff than we are at new stuff. But if we, if the marketplace goes to a certain technology and we don't, then we're at a disadvantage because we don't know how to use that. See, I've used the Windows operating system since Windows 3.1. And before that, I used Commodore 64. So I got to deal with, user interfaces and how computers operate, like, I don't know, every bit of 35 years ago. So if you got started today, I know more than you by 35 years worth of experience. And so we use our expertise to be able to take those of you who have been dragging your feet on this and help you kind of get started on this. And it's been through like traditional classroom setting where you sit down and you're amongst 10 other people and you're learning about this stuff. Libraries have done a fantastic job of bringing educators through there to teach you how to use the interface and move a mouse. But even with your smartphone, what I'll tell you is I know people don't give themselves a lot of credit. They say that you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but you totally can. And if you program yourself that you're not going to like it or not want it, you're going to struggle. But I watch like kids, like 5-6-year-olds pick up a tablet and they don't hesitate at all from touching it and moving things around because they're not worried about messing it up. They're not worried about being criticized. They're not worried about, getting something wrong. And so there's an advantage to that. So that's why you got to be open-minded and give yourself the chance of being bad at it for long enough. Come to friendly people like us that will help you not feel so terrible when you're taking on new deals, because I want you to get good at this. I want you to use it. I'm opening a coffee shop. You know what the one segment that I'm most excited about the coffee shop is? I get to have features that I wish I had at other coffee places. I want, the Dunkin' Donuts app. I don't know if you ever use Dunkin' Donuts app, but you log into it, you put your credit card information into it, and you sort of like it knows the kind of stuff that you order regularly, your favorites. Chipotle. I can order Chipotle from my phone and have it ready that I go through the drive-thru in like 2 seconds, right? I love buying stuff that way because I'm pretty regular in what I do. I buy the same stuff. So if I'm going to buy the same stuff, I can do it super easy. But also I have the option of like picking out the menu items if I don't really care and I'm not in a big rush. And I love that feature set is that it saves me time, right? I can get the stuff I always get. 2 seconds, go through the drive-thru, and I'm on my way. And I think that's what the biggest gift with technology has been, is that if you feel like getting through things quicker, you don't like going to the gas station, you don't like going to restaurants, you don't like shopping at retail, then you can do all of this stuff automated, right? So if time is your biggest thing, you can save a lot of time. Now, when I order paper towels from Amazon, they cost more, right? And then I have to judge that based on two things. Number one, did I save myself time? And did I have a lack of time? So when I have a bunch of time and it's not as valuable, then I could totally go to the store, pay a little bit less, and get some other stuff I need. But if every third time I can not do it, that's great, because I'm using a higher price point to save my time, myself time. The second thing is, I'm a big advocate of spending local. So if John's Paper Towel Shop was right down the road from me, I would totally buy from John's Paper Towel Shop. But if the value is in making things automated and easier to, I'm more likely to buy the stuff that's least valuable from places that will ship it to me. Like, I get water shipped to me. I get paper towels shipped to me. But I make sure that if I can buy something down the road, I totally do. And it's going to be that hybrid. I don't think one's going to be evil. I still want you to be able to buy from Amazon if that saves you some price. But also, when I want you to spend your entertainment dollars here in Youngstown, because it supports your neighbors and the people that bring venues to the area. And I want to see more of that. And I think you can hybridize it and do a little bit of all of that and still be in the good graces of your fellow man. So wanted to spell that out real quick. 330-729-9977 is the phone number. You can call me, or you can text me also at 330-333-1570. And I will read those messages after this next break. I also have some questions that were emailed to me from previous shows. I'm going to go through those and answer those computer and tech-related questions when we come back. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I am Joe Danier, owner of Youngstown Computer and host of this program, doing my best to take information with computers and get some of you on board with making better use of them as tools. All of us can figure out the entertainment side, the games, and the watching things on TV. We do put a lot of time into cutting the cable. I watch as some of you have slowly made your way into getting some of your content via your internet connection and buying individuals. We kind of picture that this be the buffet of content, where you go out and purchase shows that you want to watch, and you don't have to be force sold on a complete networks, some of which you don't have any interest in watching or never will watch, and that you pay for. Like, if you got your cable bill and you look through all of the channels that you get, what if you were given the allocation of costs, right? Like, you paid X amount of dollars to get, the Home Farm Show or something that you don't even watch. Like, would you want to pay that? I certainly would not. But a lot of those channels and that content was being subsidized and would have never existed if you had to choose them as part of your lineup. Well, with what happened with Cut the Cable is that you got to still support your local ISPs through Adelphia, or not Adelphia, that's Armstrong or Spectrum or any of the other cable companies. And you still got really good, fast broadband internet. And then once you have that, you have the ability to stream then Netflix and YouTube TV and Sling TV. You get to do some of the like the Amazon Primes and those the specialty networks. And they put some unique, like, their own content together, as well as purchase contracts from regular networks, so you can get like the NBC, CBS, ABC on some of those providers. And so in the very beginning, what we had to do was we had to supplement what we could get from the networks with aerial, like, or antenna TV. So you'd put a high definition antenna up, and then you'd subscribe to one of the streamings, and anything you couldn't get from streamings, as like local news and whatever, you would get from the antenna TV. And it was a pain in the butt remembering what you can get from where, and a lot of you weren't willing to do that. But I was paying $200 a month for my cable, and I was not satisfied because I didn't watch enough TV. I could buy, if I spent $4 a show, I'd probably watch maybe, four or five shows per week. And so I was way overpaying for it. And so it was easy for me. I watched a lot of sports, and most of the sports were on HD antenna, and I was just satisfied with what I could get on the antenna. Now, fast forward now, and you can get YouTube TV and pretty much get all of your regular broadcasts. They've included the broadcast feeds for your local areas in with the content that you buy. I think I pay maybe $70 a month for YouTube TV, and I get to stream it. In the beginning, I was able to do that across the country where no matter where I was, I could get programming. But this last trip that I made, I tried to watch a Browns game, and it showed that it was there. But because it geofenced me in and knew that I was not in my local area, that channel was not available, and it said that I couldn't watch it. So that sucked. I was not a big fan of now giving up that, you know, that content if I were to travel. And, you know, you never know if where you're at will have that local content. So it's still a little bit of a gamble. It's still not in its most perfect form. I think eventually it will be. I don't see, you know, these network fights. I know that NBC had a big fight with YouTube TV a while back, and they ended up getting through it. But it's, you know, some of these places will have Disney one day, and the next contract they'll lose it. So then if you're a subscriber, now you got to reshuffle things and go find it. When you know what's happening at Armstrong and Spectrum, they're like, see? What'd you put yourself through that? We got all the channels you need. Just come back over here. And so, you know, it's, again, I'm still satisfied with the way that I've done it. It still needs to be a little bit easier before it's said and done. So more of you will, or could be able to do it. So if you've got any experience with that and you want to let, other, our listeners here know the path that you choose, what services you choose, share them with me. Text it over 333-1570, and I'll let everybody know which way that, you know, you have gone. A couple text messages. Let's dig into those real quick. Joe, I thought when Windows 10 came out, it was supposed to be the last version of Microsoft. Now I see they're talking about Windows 11. Can you explain that a little bit? Yes, totally can. And so I understood it as also being the last version that you would have to pay for, right? And so I think the Apple model is probably what I would relate to most, where you bought the version of OS, but when a new one comes out, then it just upgrades to the next version. So behind the scenes, there was Windows 10, and then you know, it would update, and it would be, you would have these big service pack releases that would happen. Essentially, I mean, you were getting a new version of the operating system every time you would get one of those updates. I don't expect for you to have to pay for the next version of Windows 11. I think it's going to be one of those things where it's just going to become Windows 11, just like iOS, you know, 15 just came out, and I didn't have to pay for iOS 15. I just downloaded it and installed it. So that's my best thing. And we had a caller before that corrected on said the release never came from Apple themselves, saying that you would never have to pay for it. It was rumors and ramblings from people other than Microsoft, but they didn't deny that that was going to be a fact. So that was going to be the deal. So in the future, they may totally decide that they're going to, you know, have a purchasable version or a different version somewhere in the future. But I fully expect that there'll be a Windows 11 and 12 and, you know, 13, but I do expect them to just be an upgrade onto what you already have. So thank you for that question. Next question. This might be a stupid question, but will the new 5G phones also work with the 4G or LTE networks? From what I know, yes, they will be backwards compatible. There is so much infrastructure on the 4G and LTE. It will be a number, maybe a decade before everybody is converted to 5G because of how the hardware functions. So I totally think that your phones will have backward support for 4G and LTE networks much into when 5G takes over and it becomes the norm. Almost like right now where you still have 3G support on 4G, it takes a little while for this to happen. And in fact, where it's not even necessary, you'll see it'll take even longer. I mean, when you roll into those areas that are on edge, it's because that it's working well for the whoever's there, and nobody's willing to, you know, to carry the infrastructure investment for more than that. So to answer your question, yes, I do believe that your phone will be just fine in 4G and LTE areas, you know, without having to do anything. And they'll keep on the upper, you know, the upper edge of that. So I guess you'll just have to keep newer equipment going forward. A little bit about Youngstown Computer. If you want to deal with us and you would like to support us and bring your business to us, we'd really appreciate it. Our services are commercial and residential. We do field support and also bench work. So you can come to us. And so if you'd like to schedule an appointment, you can call 330-259-7278. That's the number. You pick option two for residential services, option one for commercial services. You can also go to our website, youngstowncomputer.com, and schedule your own appointments. I believe there's a red Book Now button, and you can actually schedule your appointments that way. And the third thing we're going to do, we're going to start doing more text messaging. So when you need services, you can message a request that way. It's much easier than coordinating people being available by phone. It's one of the big hatreds I have with doing business via phone, and if there are so many more easy ways to be able to do that. So look for a ton of easier ways to get your computer serviced with us. And if that means that if you need every once in a while, you got to change out your Wi-Fi equipment. So the general consensus is that every 5 years, you should probably be replacing that router. It's easy enough to just go buy a router, plug it in, but you might want to, add some. This time around, instead of doing a central single router, maybe you go to more like a mesh wireless system. For $250, you can get a Google Wi-Fi set up, and these little pods you put in different areas of your house, they wirelessly connect with one another, and you don't have to run a bunch of wiring around, and it does a really good job. All of my streaming stuff, I have five pods around my house, and it has 100% coverage, and even a good bit down my driveway and into my back patio and down by my fire pit. Does pretty good quality. Now, they have these same pods that Netgear makes that are more commercial-based. They support more devices and have more functions for doing, port forwarding and whatnot. So we have a wireless option that if you need our help picking out the right equipment, then, we can help you get it wired in and done. I'm also a big fan of the Unify brand made by Ubiquiti. And they have a great wired option where you put these little UFO-looking discs, and the support. We've done a bunch of installations in some restaurants around the area, and it does a fantastic. The pro versions of them just do a great job of managing bandwidth and multiple users and guest network, and just does a really good job. So if you're interested in any of those Wi-Fi upgrade or new options, give our number a call, 330-259-7278. And we'd really appreciate it when it's time to bring that business to us. Write down that number and give us a call and see if we can help you. 330-259-7278. Okay, cool. So a little bit about some questions that came in from after some of those shows. This one is about my computer keeps burning out expansion cards. What could be going wrong? Okay, so I'm going to change the question a little bit so I can kind of preach about something else. Like when you have, for instance, if you have a laptop and let's just say your power inverter gets blown out, I am really reluctant to replace the power inverter until I know sort of what caused the first one from being burned out, because they're not really supposed to, burn out. They're supposed to last. It happens sometimes. But what happens if you tear down a laptop, replace an inverter, and you put a brand new inverter, and that one too gets burned out, right? And so now you're $200 deep into something, and it's in the exact same state that it was when you started. So a lot of times, on motherboards, you have several different voltages that are going around that system bus. And there's these little step downs and step ups that allow voltages to reach higher and lower areas. That component has every bit of a chance or possibility of going bad and pushing too much voltage down a part of the motherboard bus that should have less voltage. So that includes if you've got one of your expansion slots that you're burning out like multiple cards. I would never put another card in there, and I'd be suspicious that maybe your other cards are enduring higher voltages and might cause some kind of potential fire risk. So I would definitely look at it from a voltage standpoint. If I don't recommend anybody, check your voltages, because you're not going to know what the voltages should be anyway. But it's good indication that if something's burning out, and especially if you're at the lower end of life of that, you're 5 or 6 years on that machine, and you were due to get one anyway, you might want to consider bailing in on that one and looking towards new equipment. And if you're on the newer side of that, it might be worthwhile to see if there are, there's any, you know, voltage damage on any of the other components. But if there is, then you're probably in the same boat. But if it's newer, it might be a warranty item rather than something that you're going to have to repair. And those are some of the hardest ones to troubleshoot because, again, you know, the schematics for where voltages are supposed to be on a motherboard are hard to come by. And so for somebody just to know what the slots should be and be able to test them, I don't necessarily think that any of my staff would even be able to take a crack at it. I would say if it's shorting stuff out, then, you know, I would say, yep, you know, I don't care so much about that $500 machine that I'm willing to put $200 in figuring out that voltage. I'm probably pulling the plug on it and moving on. And that's just some of the realities of some of this expendable equipment is that it's not worth knowing what it is. It's just good enough to know that some voltage, something is wrong. Okay, let's see. Next question. The power went out a couple of days ago, and I can't get the computer to come back on. Okay, so this is this time of year especially. Every winter and every fall. Every fall and every spring where you have these weather changes play havoc on more of our infrastructure than anything. So you get high winds and rainstorms and you get heavy snow and you get these weird precipitations this time of year and you get stuff, power interruptions. And I will tell you, power interruptions are one of the things that play hell on most of electronics. So whether or not it's low power, you get flickering and brownouts versus, you know, full cutoffs, it's not real good for this equipment that's really sensitive to that kind of stuff. So battery backups are probably my number one recommendation that will sort of like keep a machine running so that it doesn't get to experience the brownout. The battery backups get to experience the fluctuations. Now, a lot of you were buying $200 and $300 machines, and then the battery backups were every bit of $125 to $200. So it was harder to justify. It was harder to justify buying a battery backup that was almost as expensive as your computer. So, of course, if you're $1,000 to $1,200, it's easier to justify $125 for a good power or battery backup. But it will save you some hassle. But chances are, to answer your question, power supplies. If your computer doesn't come on, I would say one of your leading contenders for why it's not coming on may be that the power supply has gone out. So it's something you bring into us. We'd hook up a new power supply. If we get it to boot, then we change out your power supply. Most of your machines are pretty industry standard. That it's a, you know, the one we have on our shelf is probably the same one that's in your computer. Now, Dell switched to some of these proprietary sized ones, which if it's the power supply, then we've got to order one from Dell. We keep a couple of the Dell specialized ones on hand, so chances are, you know, or we might have one. But if it's power, then I hope, you know, that answers your question. It's probably power supply. If it's not power supply, then you might want to lost, you know, something like the motherboard, or we'd have to troubleshoot to see what piece has gone bad and why, what's making it stop from booting. So our phone number, 330-259-7278, is the Youngstown Computer line. So if you have that problem, please give us a call, let us know, and we'll see if we can take care of you. You're listening to the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN. I'll be back. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Youngstown Computer Show. I appreciate all of you, and thank you so much for your questions today. I think the topics were pretty good about Bitcoin and hardware and some of these easier, or I would say less challenging, some of those problems. Here's what I'm going to advocate for. I haven't done this in a while, so let's talk about system backups. So we are still in an era of something that is called ransomware, and it still does happen. And the best way to bounce back from a ransomware attack is to be able to restore your data. They make programs like, you know, Malwarebytes is one of our favorite programs that you run on your machine, and it basically tries to isolate an attack and thwart it before it has a chance of changing your data. And it's fairly, you know, fairly competent at doing that. There's some SaaS programs that will do more management on each one of the computers, each one of your computers, and it works as a sort of like an IT guy that's built into your computer that kind of works on it and manages and monitors stuff that way too. But my favorite has been, you know, having something that's local that's running gives you about a 60 to 70% shot that it'll catch it, and then running pretty you know, pretty thorough backups of your data. And in Windows, there's a backup utility that is built in, and it's probably around $100 to get a adequately sized. You want to look at the capacity of your machine. So if you go into File Explorer, it's basically a little folder on the bottom left, and then you go to Computer. You can look, I think it's this PC. You can see how big your hard drive is and how much capacity is being used. So it's a little drive C, and it'll say something like, 1 terabyte and 500 gigabytes are being used. Well, if you're making a backup and you want to do a full system backup, you're at least going to need 500 gigs. If you go to a retailer, even Youngstown Computer, you tell us you need an external drive, and we'll sell you a 2 terabyte drive for about $100. You plug that sucker into the machine, and then you let Windows manage that drive. It will make a regular backup of your stuff on that drive. You keep it plugged in. Maybe you even create two of them and cycle them one off-site. So maybe every once in a while you'll take it and take it to your office, or put it in a safe deposit box or somewhere not in your house. That way, if you have a fire, you have access to some of your accounting or some of your pictures or whatever. So that's what I would do. Your cheapest and most efficient way of doing backups is let Windows manage the backup, put a drive that's about twice the size of your data on there, and then just let it go crazy. It's important that you let Windows manage it, because if your computer gets infected with a drive that's accessible from the operating system, there's a chance that whatever on the drive can also be infected from just being plugged in. So, but if you let Windows manage it, a lot of times that drive is hidden from access from the operating system, and it gives you a little bit more, a bigger level of safety on that. So that's going to be my backup advice. We haven't done one of those in a while. But having a local backup, that's what that would be considered, as well as an offsite backup as well. So if you have like a, Carbonite was a big one, in my case, most of my data is cloud-based now. So I have OneDrive that's managing all of my documents, and then I have Google Photos, and I have Dropbox that's managing all of my data that way. So pretty much all of my machines became very disposable. If I lose it, all of my stuff is out on the cloud somewhere, and I just have to make sure that once a week that I check to make sure all of my stuff is syncing, because that's one thing that happens. If your drive fills up, it stops syncing, and then all your backups stop happening. So that would be the second thing I would recommend. One, granting for $100, getting a external hard drive and letting the operating system back your local stuff up. And number two, getting some kind of cloud storage with either Google Photos or Dropbox or OneDrive or any of the cloud storage places. And that's a monthly fee. So I think I pay maybe $20 a month for all of those. I have more than enough space to have that. All my pictures go up there. My videos go up there. My documents go up there. There isn't really much that I keep on the local side of the machine. And it does a really good job of giving me then two things. I have the local backup I can go to if I had to. And then in bad, dire circumstances, I could go to the cloud storage backup. So again, thanks everybody for tuning in. Appreciate all of my listeners and people that ask questions. We'll see you next week. This has been the Youngstown Computer Show on 570 WKBN.